My name is Chantal, and I'm an alcoholic. Wow. It's amazing to see how many people there is here this afternoon. It's like you guys warm my heart so much. And I'm glad to see there's so many young people in the room. Yes. Woo! The young people are like the next generation. They're the ones that are going to provide the follow-up of AA, and it's important that you guys stay with us. So a warm welcome to all you guys. We've got Bryant from California. Please have a warm welcome.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Bryant, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is October 10th, 1985, and my home group is the Dorys Solution Group in Summerlin, California. A couple of housekeeping things for myself. First of all, I would like to thank the volunteers from the Ontario region. I think they have done an absolutely fantastic job. You know, having to shepherd around 40,000 people all looking for the same signs is quite a monumental undertaking. You know, they just are able to see that look in our eyes and know that we do have no idea where we're going or where we're supposed to be. So, and the other thing is, today is Canada Day. Happy birthday, Canada. This is my first time to Canada, and I've been very impressed by both the hospitality and the beauty of your natural area. And the third thing is, Summerlin is very near Santa Barbara, California, and if you should ever happen to have a reason to go to Santa Barbara, on October 21st through the 23rd of this year, we're having our 21st annual Santa Barbara Convention, so feel free to come on out and enjoy our beautiful place. All right, that does all the housekeeping. That takes me down to 16 minutes, right? you know, it was kind of funny. I was someone put my name into the convention committee to have me speak and said something about 19, and the man who chose me thought I was 19 years old, and as you can probably tell, I'm not. And when I got the paperback, said I'd be speaking at the young people's meeting, I emailed him back and said, you probably have made a grave error. But anyway, he said, you know, if it worked for me, it would work for him, and so here I am. So, but I was young once, I swear. I was. You know, actually, my story, I've thought a great deal about what I could say to the young people or what I could say at any meeting, and I haven't had to worry too much about it. I'm actually not nervous. It's just extremely humid. That explains why I'm sweating profusely. But, you know, the only thing that I can share with anyone is my story. And my story is the only one I've got, and it is what it is. And if someone could take something from that and use it, then, you know, God bless you. And if you can't, that's all right, too, because there will be someone else with a story just a little different than mine. Mine is that I didn't start drinking terribly young. I started probably at about 17 years old. I was raised in a non-alcoholic family. There was never any alcohol around the house. I didn't know anything about it. When the first time I went to a bar, I had to ask a friend, what do you order to drink? I had no idea. And because I'd had, I think an older brother gave me a beer one time. I got half of it down before I threw it out, you know. And I just had no idea. But when I went to that bar that night, and he said, well, start with something like a screwdriver. That's pretty universal. And, you know, and I thought the whole idea of going to a bar was to drink so that you could get drunk. I'd never had any social drinking ideas put into my head and never had any ideas of what you're supposed to do. I assumed alcohol equals getting drunk. Getting drunk, being stupid, having fun, all that kind of stuff. So I started about then, and I drank alcoholically for about 10 years. I enjoyed the effect alcohol produced in me. I enjoyed the, you know, the being silly. I enjoyed, you know, the camaraderie of the bars and all that kind of stuff. But what happened to me was that I began to be the last one to leave. I began to be the one that was always had just a little too much. You know, I had a phrase for it that just too buzzed, got to go outside for a little while. You know, and none of the other people seemed to be having that problem. I got married, believe it or not, when I was 17 years old, and had a couple of children by the time I was 20. Both had died at childbirth, and I'd moved to a bigger city, and my wife was pregnant again. And it really became a choice of whether I wanted to continue to get drunk and high or stay with this woman and be a responsible husband and father. And for a young alcoholic, that wasn't much of a choice. You know, I wished her the best of luck and told her, you know, I hope that the baby would be all right. And, you know, that daughter today is 28 years old and, you know, and it's been a little bit of a struggle to have a relationship with a daughter that I've never been around. But, you know, those are areas in which I've been able to do some work. So once I was out of that marriage, it was like full-on party time. And I wanted to make up for all of the lost time that I'd heard about these people drinking in their teens. And I just wanted to drink and party as often as I possibly could. I worked so that I could drink. And no matter what job I had, I just figured that if you had a job, you had to drink during the job, you know. So that led me through a few jobs. But in the long and short of it, what happened was that about 28 years old, I started running into problems. I had a couple of DUIs, and at 29, I had my last DUI. I had thought that I had outfooled the police, the bosses, the wives, all of these people who were complaining about how much I drank. You know, and one last time, I had to make that call from jail saying, "Can you come get me?" And in 1984 in Southern California, there was a chain of hospitals called Care Unit. And, you know, they were the ones running the commercials at 2 o'clock in the morning. "Do you think you might have a problem?" Blah, blah, blah. So there was a lady from a care unit there trolling the jails for business. And she talked to me as I was being booked into my cell, and she says, "Do you think you might have a problem with alcohol?" Now, if I could have reached her, I would have choked her. Unfortunately, the bars were too small and she was too far away. But, you know, it was the first time in my life that I actually thought that I might have a problem with alcohol. That was April 4th, 1984. That was my last drunk driving. I immediately got fired from my job because I crashed the company truck. I thought they were being a little abrupt. But the other thing that happened was that now I was unemployed, and I'd been told that I might have a problem with alcohol, and if I was to do anything to get my job back, I was probably going to have to do something that looked good, like go through a rehab. So now I made the rounds of all these hospitals and institutions that said, "Oh, sure, we can help you get sober. It'll just be $17,000. And I remember this one guy saying, "Well, aren't there friends and family that you could borrow the money from?" And I said, "Do you think if I had friends and family who had $17,000, I'd be here?" You know, I mean, they weren't going to lend me any more money if they hadn't gotten back what they'd already lent me. So anyway, I found a place that was run by the County of Orange, and I went through their 30-day rehab. I refer to it as my spin dry because that's kind of what it did for me. I did my 30 days. I learned about alcoholism. I learned about the effects of alcoholism and all of that kind of good stuff. And I got out and I thought, okay, I've got it under control. I'm afraid of ever getting drunk again. I know I have a head full of knowledge and there's nothing that I need to know now that I can't just figure this out. And I had started to go to AA right out of my spin dry. And I went to 3-4 meetings a week, and I was doing pretty good. And then one hot July day, I was having to actually be picked up because I'd lost my license, too, for work. And he let me off, and I was walking past a liquor store. And thought, man, it's hot. Man, I'm thirsty. And I walked into this liquor store, and I looked around, and there wasn't anybody I knew from the meetings. And so I walked back to the back cooler and looked at the beers and looked at the sodas and looked at the beers and looked at sodas, and I reached for the beer. And I picked it up, and I walked to the counter, and I paid for the beer all while looking around, and nobody was there. And I walked outside, and I popped the top, and still nobody was there. No lightning bolts from heaven. None of the stuff that I had been so afraid of when I got sober. I thought, well, perhaps I've made too big a deal out of this. You know, I can do this controlled drinking now. So that began about a 14-month journey of the most insane drinking that I could have ever done. I was going to 3 meetings a week, and I was drinking every day. I was secretarying a newcomers meeting. I didn't see the conflict of interest there for a while. And I got into, you know, stealing people's pills out of their homes and all this kind of stuff. And finally, one day I was too high at the newcomers meeting, and I said, you know, I don't think I'm the right guy for this job. Yeah, I can't seem to get this. And so they all agreed. So anyway, I would go to these meetings, and I would raise my hand as a newcomer. And for the next year, every meeting I'd go to, I would raise my hand as a newcomer. And it became this civil war inside my head that was intolerable. I knew by going to the meetings that I shouldn't be drinking, and that I would get away from the meetings, and I would say to myself, but I have to drink. It's the only time I feel good. And I would go back and forth and back and forth, excuse me. And so I would, try and make myself look a little better. Somebody would say, gee, Brian, don't you have about 30 days? And I'd say, in a couple of days. I swear that's it, you know. And I just didn't seem to get it. And then a couple of events happened. One day I was at a stag meeting, and I was really miserable, and I just didn't understand why AA wasn't working for me, and it seemed to be working very well for all of the people around me. And this guy looked me square in the eye and he said, Brian, if you want what we have, you got to do what we do. And it was such a novel idea to me that, you know, if they were successful and I wasn't, then perhaps I should try their way instead of mine. And you know what, I heard somebody earlier this morning talking about being in a kindergarten. And here's kind of what happened to me. Is that one of the things that I'd done to make myself look good was to have a sponsor. So I'd ask this guy to be my sponsor, and then I promptly never called him again. And so I called him, and I said, I need to talk to you. And I really was at the point of giving up, because I thought that perhaps I was one of those few that Alcoholics Anonymous would not work for. But I met Lionel, my sponsor, out in the playground of a preschool. So they had little bitty chairs and little bitty swings and little bitty things like this. And for the next hour, I cried my eyes out, and that was my moment of truth. Because I realized that I could not go on drinking and going to meetings the way I had. And I realized that I couldn't really go on drinking because my life was just about ready to melt down. And I was afraid that if anybody found out what was going on inside my head, they would lock me in a mental institution and never let me out. I was having that civil war was raging all of the time. I was 30 years old, and I thought, I'm too young to be an alcoholic. Well, I wasn't. I was an alcoholic, and now the only choice left for me was whether or not I chose to do it. You know, I'd been around the meetings, I'd heard about the steps, and I'd heard about all of these things, but I wasn't willing to do them. But, you know, when I had that moment of clarity, I had the desperation of a drowning man, like they talk about in the book. I was blessed with that gift of desperation. I went to my sponsor, and I said, I will do whatever it takes. I don't care what you ask of me. I don't care what you say to me. I have to do this for my own sake. I have to save my life. And I went through the steps, through the first 5 steps in a matter of about a month and a half, because I knew that I did not have any chances left. I'd used up all of my second chances, third chances, and so on. I was afraid that I was not going to make it. That was October 10th, 1985, as I said. and I have had a full human experience in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I have had another marriage. I've had the gift of a son who's never had to see me drunk. I have had a wealth of friends that I never thought I could have. And I have had, this is my first international convention. And this is, you know, just a goosebump type of experience for me. This is so cool for me. And, you know, I have had to do all of the things that they talked about. I've sponsored people. I've had a couple, three different sponsors. I've been intergroup representative. I've been, you know, secretary, coffee maker, anything that took. You know, I was going to do whatever it took for me to stay sober. And, you know, thank God that I found Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it's one of the things that just saved my life. And to see myself as one of such a wonderful community as Alcoholics Anonymous makes me so proud, and I couldn't be happier. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Brian. So our next speaker, I think for half the crowd here, doesn't need an introduction, right? But I'll introduce him anyways. This is Joe from Texas.
Well, hi, group. My name's Joe, and I am an alcoholic. Friday, June the 5th of 94. I'm as thankful as I know how to be for that today. You know, the only thing I know about being an alcoholic is the way I drink alcohol. And the only thing I know about staying sober is Alcoholics Anonymous. Anybody else feel like throwing up? I know I do. Good Lord. Wow. It's wonderful to be here. It's wonderful to be a part of something this special and this important. This is fantastic. Some lady earlier gave me some advice, and she said, well, just picture everybody naked. She said, honey, I have all day, you know. I can't help it. It's just what I do. But I'm still nervous doing that. Thanks for the advice, though. Grew up in a small town in East Texas, or in Fort Worth, they call it East Texas anyway. And I was walking home from school one day. I was about 10 or 11 years old. I always say this. I forgot. I come from a good family. My mom and dad produced a missionary and a preacher, and my sister is almost an angel. I was the only sorry one in the bunch, you know. I guess I kind of blazed the trail to hell, and everybody else went the other way. But I was confused growing up because half my family was Irish Catholic, and the other half was like Assembly of God evangelical kind of deal. So I didn't know whether we were crawling into church or doing cartwheels. So I had a hard time with the God bit at first. But anyway, walking home from school, a buddy of mine said, you know what, if we're going to be real men, we've got to dip Copenhagen snuff. I said, by God, you're right. And I took a dip, made about three or four steps, fell down, and I've been doing it ever since, you know. And we got to his house later on that afternoon, and he said, you know, if we're going to be real men, we've got to drink whiskey. And I said, by God, you're right. And never having had a drink in my life, he poured a shot glass, Jim Beam. I'll never forget it as long as I live. I can tell you everything I had on that day, everything I did. And he got it filled up, and I looked at it, and I said, you know what, that's not going to be enough. So we got off this plastic cup, filled that halfway up, got that stuff down the hole where it does the most good. And let me tell you what happened, folks. I felt just like a man ought to feel. I wanted to kill somebody, go find a girl, roll around, or play some football. I didn't know what was happening, but I thought to myself, there you go, brother. I thought to myself, as soon as I get grown, I'm going to do this on a regular basis. And that's kind of how my deal got started. Being in a small town, it's easy to get a hold of what you want to get a hold of there. You know, everybody's got an older brother or sister. You can get it at the liquor store. It's not a problem. By the time I was 15, I was declared the town drunk by the justice of the peace. I began to date his daughter after that. I figured it might keep me out of trouble. And moved up to DA's daughter later, but that's another story. We'll fast forward all this. It gets really funny after that, but here's what happened to me. I was passed out in my front yard one morning in the middle of December, and the second most important day of my life occurred. My next-door neighbor came and hit me on the head, and he said, boy, I don't know, but you might have a slight drinking problem. And he gave me a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he said, if you're ever interested in doing something about your drinking, like, I don't know, stop, there's some place I could take you. And at that same time, my very best friend got sent off to the Goonie Roof Treatment Center, whatever you want to call it, and I needed a break. I had started drinking real heavily at this point on a daily basis by now, and I've gone from like 215 pounds down to 160. I am dying. And so I visited AA, and the problem was the youngest dude there was like 34 years old. You know, I was 17 at the time. And I thought to myself, you know, you walk into meetings and they got these signs hanging on the wall. Look, just like a geriatric kindergarten, if you ask me. And I thought, man, if I ever got that old, I'd quit drinking too, you know. And so there went my 30-day visit. I left and did what I really needed to do. And for the next 6 months, I just started a period. The only thing I know how to describe is just zombolic drinking, man. I have been thrown out of the house. I'm living now in a shed next to a friend of mine's house. And I am, by God, getting it on and having a good time. We had this big trip planned to, I shouldn't probably tell this story in a foreign country. Anyway, we wind up on this big trip down to Mexico and down to Puerto Vallarta. There's 100 people in my whole graduating class, and we all went. And it was supposed to be a 5-day trip, and I lasted 18 hours. The little bartender, I guess he gave me too much, and I got upset, and I was going to beat him to death with the bar stool. And they brought me down later on into the evening, and they thought, if I get something to eat, maybe that'll straighten him out a little bit. And that's when I saw my opportunity. I was going to kill myself. So I ran out in the ocean. I got about 400 or 500 yards out. The water never got above my chest, you know. And my buddies were trying to pull me back to shore. And just at that time, the Federales were passing by. No Mounties here, it don't look like. And just in case you ever get down to Mexico, get drunk, and try to kill yourself, don't do it in public. It's illegal. So they were gonna carry me off to jail, and somehow they managed to keep all that from happening. I had another opportunity to get out of there, and I was going to jump off the balcony, and I was on a dead running start, and I would have made it had I opened the sliding glass window, but I didn't, and I just kind of come to, knocked smooth out, and the best fight of my life, everybody I knew just beating the heck out of me, and I come to that later on that next morning, and here I'm getting that talk one more time. Joe, why do you drink the way you drink? Why? Why do you do this? You know? And non-alcoholic people are the only people in the world that ask that question and cannot stand the truth. And when you tell a non-alcoholic person why you do what you do, they get upset, you know, because it's, I don't know. And that's the truth. I don't know why I do what I do. I have no idea. Come back, instead of making the whole trip, I had a little bus and a couple of Federale escorts back to the airport, and I got deported from the entire country of Mexico. That was awful. That was awful hard to explain, you know. I don't know if any of y'all have been there. It's hard to get thrown out of that place. It ain't hard to get put in jail, but it's hard to get thrown out. My folks were kind enough to get me at the airport, and my dad said, boy, what do you think we ought to do with you? I said, well, I would really like to go to the bar. I could use a drink right about now. And he said, that ain't happening. I said, well, you can take me to jail. I know I got some warrants out somewhere, or maybe take me to one of them treatment centers. He worked at a real nice one there in Dallas, a Timberline, a real old famous one. He looked me dead in the eyes. He said, son, you ain't worth the money for a treatment center. And I said, well, what about that A&A? He said, that's the best idea you've ever had in your life. And they slowed the car down a little bit, pushed me out, gave me my bag, said, don't bother coming home. And that's how I got sober. I walked in the meeting and had my little bag, and everybody there was laughing. And I was crying and didn't know what to do. And they took me in the back room after that meeting, and they had a talk with me. See, because I visited, they didn't care much for me. I tell them everything about alcoholism, you know, like why you get it, what chromosome color number it is. They do research papers when I was in school about why I was the way I was, because it was not my fault. You know how that goes. And they took me in the back room. They said, boy, you're gonna have sugar diabetes. You need to get a hold of some candy. You need to eat a lot of candy. They said, you need to come to a meeting every day till we tell you to stop. And you need to get a sponsor. And they gave me this guy. His name was Head. Head had about 9 months, and Head was a real redneck. He stopped going to school in about the sixth grade, and he couldn't really read or write that well and all that, but their whole logic was is that the odds of him getting sober weren't real good, but if he worked with me, he might have a chance. You know what I mean? Because there was no way it was going to happen for me. And so the way they believe you do AA there is if you're not shaking badly enough, and you can hold a book and you can read, you can get started working the steps. It wasn't, you don't do a step a month, a step a year. It's kind of real old-fashioned AA, you know, kind of like you got to work all the steps before you can get to come in the meeting. They hadn't heard the new rules yet that's kind of around everywhere. Everybody gets to do it the way they want to do it. They don't believe that there. It's kind of old-timey. That's what they call it now. I just call it AA. It's called old-timey AA now. Everybody talks about, or sometimes people talk about their inner child and this and that. And there wasn't none of that happening where I sobered up. It's a guy come in the meeting one night, been in therapy. And therapy is good. I think it's a wonderful thing. But he'd come in, he was working on his inner child, had a teddy bear, no Ken. Ken's this big, tall guy, looks like Mr. Clean. He said, what's that for? And the guy told him, he said, well, you know what? What you really need to do is work on the SOB you are right now. And all you need to know about your inner child, it needs its butt whooped, you know. And he ripped the head off the teddy bear, threw it in the trash. Guy never came back. I don't know what happened to him. I wish him well. That made things difficult when I got to the city, and they do things different there. I remember the first time somebody started talking about that, I jumped up, started screaming, yelling, and cussing. And I looked around, and I was the only one. I don't do that as much anymore. Just every now and then. I've been really fortunate. And this is what's made the difference for me in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's having a God. That's made the biggest difference. You guys gave me a God that I can understand by not understanding Him. And sponsorship has made the biggest difference. You know, Randy was a tremendous sponsor. It would not be an AA talk if I did not mention Jack H. from Fort Worth, Texas. He'll kill me. I hope this is taped. That way I won't be in any more trouble. As far as he's concerned, it's a great AA talk now. His name's been mentioned, and Bill, and all these guys that are up here with me. And that's what it's about. I got to make my first 12-step call when I was like 20 days sober. And to me, this is fun. I'm not going to lie. This is really cool getting to be up here and do this. But when it comes down to it, the best part of AA is one-on-one with another alcoholic, sharing our experience, strength, and hope, and trying to carry them through the steps and watching the lights come on and watching the difference happen. You know, they. I guess I'm up here because I got sober when I was young. And they wanted us to talk a little bit, or they said something about talking about, you know, the difference between somebody being a little older, a little younger. I don't know anything about that. They just treated me like a drunk. And they said, here's the deal. Either you do it or you don't. And it's up to you. And that's all we have to offer anybody, you know. If you've had enough, and I think, if you ask me, there's three kinds of people that come to AA. There's people that need to get sober. We get them from the courts and all that kind of stuff, wives, people like that, you know. And there's people that want to get sober. And we see them, the constant retread, just in and out. And I believe with everything in me that those people really want to stay. They want to get sober. They really do. But those two never get to stay. And Brian just spoke about it. It's the ones that are desperate. They're the ones that stay. Because they're the ones that will go to any length to stay sober. And any length isn't that difficult. There's just 12 steps, man. It's not that hard. All you got to do is take them in order with the direction of a good sponsor, or even a bad one if that's what you got. It doesn't matter. All you got to do is take the action. You'll get the results. You don't have to believe in it. You don't have to nothing. All you have to do is do it. It's about action. My favorite chapter in the book is Into Action. You know, because that's what this is all about. That's what this weekend is about. It's about being into action and about giving back what you got, you know. And the people have made all the difference. I know some wonderful folks. There's a bunch sitting up here. There's a bunch, you know, all over Texas and all over the Midwest that I've got to meet and gotten to know. And they're the winners. You know, I know there's winners and losers in AA. Some of us are going to die drunk, and some of us are going to die sober. And I really would like to die sober. I really would. That'd be a heck of a neat way to go. I got to go home to pick up my chip, my 11-year chip last weekend up in Fort Worth. I always go home to Fort Worth to get my chip. And Jason got to come with me. Jason's a good friend of mine, and we had dinner at these folks' house, and there were about 25 of us. And there was over 500 years of sobriety there. That's the other only good thing I've done. I've stuck around the old timers. And this is how you do it. You get around them, and if you want to have a real good time, you just shut up. But that don't work for me, you know. I got to get in the mix. And let me tell you, it causes you a lot of problems in life, but it's well worth it. It's well worth it. I wouldn't trade for any of it. I'm supposed to go for 20 minutes. It don't look like I'm going to make it. I'll tell you about the most profound thing I've ever heard in Alcoholics Anonymous. This is it. This guy, the man's name was Dax. He said, not that one, but kind of, but close enough. We'll just call it that just for fun. He said, Joe, you know, if you don't drink, you can't get drunk. I never put any of that together. I used to get up every morning and I would pray with all the sincerity in my heart, God, don't let me get as drunk as I did yesterday. And man, I meant it. I really did. I meant it with everything in me. And then I did what I had to do. I started drinking. And the next thing you know, I'm off and running, and it's just another day. It's just another day. Y'all taught me how to pray here. God, don't let me take a drink today. That's made a huge difference. This made all the difference. This is why I get to stand here. I'm amazed that anybody would invite anybody like me, especially to something like this. But a good friend of ours named Iron Mike, he said, God showed me mercy instead of justice. And you know what? That's the truth for me. The young lady was speaking this morning. She said there is no logical explanation for us to come from where we come from to be where we are right now. And you know what? There's not. There's only one thing big enough and bad enough to do it. It's the grace of God through Alcoholics Anonymous for folks like me. It's the only thing. It's the only thing. This is just a fantastic way to live. I wouldn't trade my life for anything today. I mean nothing. I've got a wonderful life. Got a wonderful little old wife. She minds most of the time. Y'all believe that? I got some oceanfront property in Arizona I could sell you too, you know. I'm going to be on the floor tonight, ain't I, Bob? But I do. I got a wonderful life. I got a wonderful wife, and I've got the best friends in the world. Getting to be around the kind of quality of folks that I know and get to share my life with is just the best part of it. I showed up in Houston, Texas about 4 years ago on a, I don't know if any of y'all have ever done this, but I've been on running dry drunks before. That's where you do everything wrong in AA but not drink and try to help another person. I've done that a time or two. And I was looking for some folks I had met a few years earlier. And the miracle of it was they were still there. Bill was there. Danny was there. Walter was there. They saved my life that night. I had every intention of taking everything I had down to Mexico and finishing the deal off. You know, I really did. I really did. But you know what? They were there. We went and had dinner afterwards, and that passed. That passed. This too shall pass. Whatever you're going through, good or bad, it's not going to stay forever. Even in the Bible it says something like that. And it came to pass. You know, it never came to stay. Nothing. Good, bad, ugly, indifferent. It comes to pass, and that's just the way it is. And if you're looking for continuous sobriety, you can find it in AA. And if you want to be reasonably happy and comfortable most of the time, if you do what we do, you can have it. And if you don't ever forget where you come from and you're willing to give it away at any time, day or night, you get to stay. It doesn't require very much. Don't drink. Help others. You know, that's it. That's it. I am so glad I got to be here today. I'm shocked. I'm amazed. I cannot believe this. This has been one of the best days of my life. That's just the truth. That's just the truth. And the best part about it is I get to share it with people I know and I love and the folks that I don't know, but I love you anyway. You know what I'm saying? That's what AA has given me. I hated everybody and everything before I got here. And I love every one of you. Thank you all so much.
For a minute there, I thought they were going to start the wave. You want to realize one of my fantasies? Why don't we do the wave? Wouldn't that be cool? How about we start it in the front, just once? All right? One, two, three. Woo! Oh, my God! You guys are too much. Wow. Thank you so much. And last but not least, we've got Kelly from Colorado.
I'm Kelly. I'm an alcoholic. Now I know I'm in a young people's meeting. I brought two tissues. That's probably not enough because I'm a crybaby, so I'll just be going through that as it happens. But I'm so grateful to be here and to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm really thankful for you guys because of that. Because I have to be an alcoholic. I don't get a choice in that, but I get to be a member of AA. And I get to stand up here, and I've spent the last couple of months really fearing this moment, and thank God for you guys, because the last couple of days when I tell people I was speaking, it wasn't like, oh, that's scary. It was like, wow, that's great. You're speaking in an AA meeting, you know? And it wasn't a big fear thing. And I got to realize that I'm just a member, and I just get to be here, you know? And thank God for that. I'm still shaking up here, though. So apparently God hasn't removed all my fear, but I'm trying. God, I'm glad to be here. And to be at my third international convention, which is incredible. Yeah. And that's more to my absolute perseverance of being a conference junkie than anything else. Because I went to my first conference and was hooked, and try not to miss them whenever possible, you know. I walked in here at 15 and I was beaten down and hopeless, or at least, you know, complete and total lack of hope in anything. Hoping to die, you know, well, there's the hope again, but just wishing that I was going to die, you know, not quite sure how it was going to happen, but really looking forward to it happening soon. And most of all, feeling as old as I hope I ever will. I was at an old-timers meeting, a great old-timers meeting a couple of years ago, and that was something that I heard from every old-timer was when they walked in, like they felt as beaten down and as old and used up and beaten and done. And they've never felt that bad, you know, since. And that was my experience. You know, I walked into that first meeting, and I didn't have good reasons at all for being there. You know, it's great. I think it's a testament to my higher power that I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous and I wanted to be here for the guys. I wanted to be here for, because my best friend was sober and I wanted to be with her. Like, I had no intention myself of actually sobering up that day, and something happened in that meeting and I realized that I felt like home, and I've been coming ever since, you know. I won't go too much into my story because the reality is that I drank for 3 to 4 years and I've been sober 3 to 4 times that, you know, so I have a lot more experience in my life sober than I have when I was drinking. You know, the fact was that I found alcohol and I fell in love with it, and I realized that it solved all of my problems. At least I thought that it solved all my problems. And being the reasonably smart person that I was at 11 years old or whatever, I decided that if it solved all my problems and did all this stuff when I drank, you know, that one time, I should drink all the time, and then it would solve all my problems for the rest of my life. And it would make me feel that good all the time, you know, because I was really looking for the shortcut to happiness. And that didn't last very long, and it crashed down pretty hard, you know, and I ended up my drinking, just drinking with whoever would drink with me, you know, doing things that you shouldn't be doing at 15, and really hating who I was, you know, and like I said, just hoping to die soon. I tried to have this really good look good when I was drinking, and so I was in school and I was doing all that kind of stuff, and ended up like drinking with these guys that lived on the beach. I lived in a town in Santa Cruz in California. Woo! There's a couple people from Santa Cruz here. There's people from every stage of my sobriety here, which was really incredible the last couple of days. I've ran into all these wonderful people from my past and hopefully from my future, you know. But I was drinking with these guys that slept on the beach and collected cans to get their money so they could go, which was great for me. It seemed like a good entrepreneurial way to keep drinking all the time. And so I'm drinking with these guys, and they're telling me that I need to stop. And that just didn't seem right, because here I was going to go to college, and I had all these, you know, I was going to be the good kid. And inside, like, I just was not there at all, and they could see right through it. And eventually most people could see right through what I was trying to pretend I was versus the hopeless alcoholic that I really was, you know. And so I walked into that first meeting, and I loved it. And like half of it, probably for the first couple months, to be honest, was probably like, here's a bunch of people. Like, I've screwed over all the people in my life. I've ruined all these relationships. I've burned all these bridges. Here's a whole new group of people that don't know me that maybe I can, you know, get something over on them. And I think that a lot of people are like that when we're new. We come in here sick. We don't come in here well, you know. And I didn't have any good ideas when I came in. I had to follow what you guys suggested. And it took a while to get out of that. But eventually, even in sobriety, like, I got to see very graphically how alcohol was just a symptom of my disease. Like, the real problem was in me. The real problem was in my head, you know, and how I acted and how I still just wanted to screw people over and get mine, you know. And that got brought to me, and I got to experience the pain of doing those same bad behaviors in sobriety, you know. And I know a lot of people in here get to walk through that and still stay sober, and that's one of those gifts of the program, is you get to walk through stuff that's not always that comfortable. But I got to deal with that, and I got to eventually ask for help, and that's when I got my first sponsor, was when I actually got willing to ask for help and humble myself in this program, you know, this whole idea of humility that I had no idea what it was when I walked in. And I walked into this meeting, and I didn't know the woman that was going to be my sponsor at all, and I didn't have any clue who she was, what she had going for it, how much time she had, who her sponsors were, you know, all these things that now I think about because it's so important. But I just asked another alcoholic to help me, and she said yes, you know, and that was my first experience in walking into the actual program, you know. Before that, I'd just been going to meetings, and that was good enough, and it kept me sober, and it kept me a little bit more out of trouble than before. But when I actually started working the program was when I really felt a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I started working the program, and I managed to be able to do that with others, which is amazing. I've gotten to walk some people through the steps. Just lately had a woman that I'm sponsoring that walked through all 12 steps, and now, you know, it's such an amazing experience to be a part of it from the other end. But I was able to work with this woman, and I've had several sponsors. I've gotten to do a lot in recovery where I've moved several times, and each time gotten to start over as that newcomer in the groups, you know, and that's an awesome experience, actually. You know, it's scary as hell, but it's a wonderful thing to get to walk into an area and get a new sponsor and find a new home group and get to do all those things over just like a newcomer, you know. Something that I think really saved me and really helped me in my sobriety was service. And I got into service really early on. I was going to this young people's meeting in Santa Cruz, and at about 4 months sobriety, before I'd gotten the sponsor and started working the steps or anything healthy, you know, I was this little hellion running around this young people's meeting. And the treasurer had run off with the money, and so they decided in their infinite wisdom to make me the treasurer. You know, give it to the 15-year-old newcomer without a bank account and no job, you know, and no sponsor. And I loved it, you know. It was just so incredible that they would offer that experience to me, that they would trust me with that, you know, and that was something that I got to experience. And ever since then, I've been in service, and I was just thinking about this last night, like, for the first couple of years of service, I did it because it was suggested. You know, the spark really wasn't there for me. I did it because people told me to, and I did it because in my groups in those days, they would elect people into positions, and it was called railroading, and you really had no choice in the matter, you know. You were suggested, and they voted on it before you got to say no, and then you were doing it. But at some point, and I think I was around 4 years sobriety, and I was at an AA conference, and it was one that was a little bit far away from my house. I lived in Santa Cruz. It was up in Marin County, which is about 100 miles north. And I'm at this meeting, and it's a sort of small Saturday night meeting. I'm there with four people that I know, don't know anybody else. And they all decided about halfway through the speaker that they were going to go out and smoke. And so I'm sitting here in this meeting. I'm all alone, and I start feeling sorry for myself. And then the meeting ends, and I'm sitting there not knowing anyone, not knowing what to do, you know. And in the time, I guess it was probably 10 minutes that my friends were out there, and the meeting ended, and I stood up, and someone said, "Will you help put away chairs?" And not knowing anyone there, I just started picking up the chairs and putting away. And in that 10 minutes or so, like, I got to realize that, like, I made a bunch of friends. And I got out of myself. And my friends came back, and I was introducing them to people. And, like, it changed my whole mindset in that experience. And something about that has just clicked for me. And I do a lot of service to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I admit it's a completely selfish reason. Because I do service because it feels good, you know. Not all of the service feels good while I'm doing it, but that feeling in my heart is still there, you know. And that's been a real gift that I've gotten out of this program. I keep doing the service because of that. I haven't always been as successful at the unity and recovery parts of the program, you know, like the speaker before me was talking about dry drunks, and I've certainly experienced that, you know, and what I try to do now is just build that balance in all three of the legacies of this program, and going to meetings and working the steps and doing the service, you know, and when I can have all those three, life could be terrible and I'm fine with it, you know. It's like being able to float on the waves rather than sink beneath them. And that's just the thing that I try to do the most right now, is, and that's been an ongoing thing, and for probably the last 5 years of my recovery, is just trying to keep that balance going, you know. And when I get that gift, and when I can work them all together, life is amazing. And when I don't have one of those, it's like trying to sit on a three-legged stool that suddenly lost one of the legs, and I just can't do it, you know. And yeah, so that's something that I just try and do, and most of all, just walking through each day in recovery, you know, trying to deal with the change. That's been a wonderful thing. My higher power always puts things in my life to work on. And he makes them really obvious, because sometimes I'm a little bit blind to what the lessons are going to be. So he puts, like, the billboard right in front of my face to try and tell me. And so I've just been working on these things, and lately it's been dealing with change, you know, and I've got a lot of it coming up. I just turned 30, which was sort of exciting. Yay. I'm getting married in 23 days. Yeah. That one deserves that. You know, all that kind of stuff. I didn't believe that I would live past 25, certainly not 30. You know, that's a complete and total gift of the program, because I would not be here. You know, I would not have lived this long. And I learned everything about relationships from you guys. Certainly not from my family. And not all the good stuff. I've gotten to learn bad stuff too. But I learned how to have a relationship with with friends and with sponsees and with my sponsor and at women's meetings, which I hated when I first got sober. You know, dealing with another woman, there is no way. And so I've gotten all these lessons in how to live life. You know, that's something, I guess, getting sober at 15, I got to grow up, and I got to grow up, you know, like the two parts of that. And it's just such an amazing gift to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and to be here at this conference, you know. Thank you very much.
It's already over. If you're a newcomer, if you're young, I think you've got fine examples. If it worked for those guys, why wouldn't it work for you? I mean, they gave you the recipe to staying sober. Do meetings. Get a sponsor. Go into services. Find your definition of your higher power. Have gratitude, but stay in the action. You have to stay, keep the wheel moving. So I thank you so much. I think there's a lot of people here that used to be part of the problem, but decided today, just for today, to be part of the solution. So we're going to finish the meeting. I thank you guys again for a great share. And I had the choice between like three closing prayers, but I decided, why don't we do like serenity prayer again? It keeps us together.
God,